This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight. Africans are keeping a keen eye on today's U.S. election. Uganda's presidential candidate Bobi Wine was briefly detained by police today. And at least 54 people were killed in western Ethiopia, an area where ethnic minorities have been deliberately targeted. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Like millions around the world, Africans are keeping keen eyes on the U.S. election. They are weighing up on how the outcome could affect them. Darren Taylor reports.
This is the most polarized and toxic U.S. election race in history, says the director of the Economist Group's Africa office, Herman Warren.
If you listen to the Republicans, Biden and Kamala Harris want to create a socialist utopia. They're going to open up the borders. They're going to increase taxes. Law and order is going to break down. It's going to be Venezuela.
Warren says the Democrats also view the election as existential.
This is the most important election of our lifetime, with significant crises of healthcare, clearly, economic, climate, social disorder on a scale that many people have never seen. So they're about bringing back a steady hand and getting things back on track with empathy, bridge building, being able to reach across.
Warren says many Africans he's spoken with have been shocked by the level of social unrest in the U.S. this year. He says some are convinced that the killing of George Floyd in May by a white police officer will somehow play a role in the election result. Warren adds that the Democrats have indeed emphasized the need for racial reconciliation in the run-up to the vote. But he says what's resonated with Africans is Trump's questioning of Biden's previous efforts to improve the lives of racial minorities.
So when it comes to Biden, he's been at the forefront over the last 50 years or so that he's been in public service and criminal justice reform, which hasn't worked in your favor. Why are you continuing to put your trust in this Democratic Party?
Warren agrees with the Trump campaign's assertion that the president has helped some disadvantaged communities, but doesn't believe that will capture enough minority votes.
I think that we are going to see the vast majority of women, of minorities, African Americans, Hispanics, and so on, swinging to the Democratic side.
He says African observers believe Kamala Harris was an inspired, appropriate choice as Biden's running mate.
She has run campaigns, so she's been through that fire. She was district attorney of San Francisco. She was the attorney general of California. She's a senator, and I think she'll be able to appeal to the progressives and not scare away some of the more conservative elements in the Democratic base.
Warren says many in Africa are convinced that the Trump administration alienated the continent.
The trade war is a classic case. It didn't start with China. It actually started putting tariffs on friendly nations. South Africa got caught up in that kind of damage when he was smacking tariffs on steel and aluminium, which threatened 7,000 jobs.
No matter who's in the White House in January, says Warren, there'll be lasting repercussions for Africa's relationship with its biggest trade partner, China.
Notwithstanding the incredibly divisive, poisonous environment, political environment that we're in the United States, one of the few areas of agreement is that China has to be confronted.
Africans maybe don't realize it, says Warren, but the U.S. is about to make some decisions about China that could have a profound influence on the way in which the giant of the East has been doing business in Africa. He adds that some Africans believe a Biden presidency would allow them to forge stronger economic ties with the U.S., while also allowing them space to maintain good relations with Beijing. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
As the African diaspora heads to the polls, a report by Pew Research Center shows a growing voting bloc as black voters in the U.S. of all backgrounds are among the most motivated in the 2020 election, and their motivations vary. VOA's Salem Salamon has the story.
For most African immigrants in the U.S., the right to vote is precious. And Ivo Tesong, a Cameroonian-American who immigrated to the U.S. in 1986, said voting is something he would never take for granted.
Being fortunate to migrate and come and live in the United States, that civic duty cannot be taken for granted, because we know what our families are going through back home. We have a war right now that we've lost many family members, friends, and the government's response has not been adequate to call for a peaceful settlement of the crisis. So here, if we are also complacent, then it's a lose-lose situation.
Tesong is one of an estimated 2.4 million foreign-born African immigrants in the country, most of whom are eligible to vote, according to the U.S. Census figures. He owns a technology business in Silver Spring, Maryland, and is the chairperson of the U.S. Cameroon Democracy Network. And although he is supporting Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden, he has helped register people of all political beliefs.
What we're trying to do is let each and every community member understand that we cannot stay in the fringes and not get involved, because those issues that are important to the mainstream Americans are also very important to us. As a community, go and vote early. If it rains, please take an umbrella, sit in, stick it out.
A new report by the Pew Research Center found that black voters of all backgrounds are among the most motivated in the 2020 election.
Of those who were coming from among black immigrants in the United States, we did see a fivefold increase of the total population coming from who are black and immigrants. So this is really high in terms of, and this makes up about 10% of the black American population are immigrants.
That was Neil Ruiz, an associate director of Global Migration Demography Research at the Pew Research Center. The center found that voters with African heritage are poised to continue playing a large role, since they are younger than the electorate at large.
4 in 10 black eligible voters are millennials or Gen Zers, so they're younger. So in all 9 battleground states, for instance, millennials, those who are currently ages 24 to 39 in 2020, make up a slight plurality of all black eligible voters.
And although polls have found that majority of black voters back Biden in the presidential election, the African diaspora is not a monolithic voting group. There are no definitive surveys as to its political leanings. And the Somali American community in Minneapolis, some say they are voting Republican. Sophia Yassin Farah said she has grown disillusioned after years of voting for Democrats.
When I saw the kids, they don't have programs. They don't have any community, you know, centers that can help the kids. We have a lot of problems with kids with drugs. We have a lot of kids with, you know, who went to prison. They were born during that 20 years that I lived here. And when I look at the policies, Democrats, it's just going to stay the same.
Others in the African diaspora stress the need to think local first, regardless of party lines. Olanike Adebayo lives in Miami and has roots in Nigeria through her father. A lawyer, she ran for circuit court judge and lost both times. Adebayo says a host of offices matter besides the national posts.
November is very important for all of us, but I'm always stressing that local elections matter. They affect your everyday life, your local officials. We have constitutional issues and county referendums, and all those are important. But the people who do your everyday life, your councilwomen, your men, your school boards, your judges, those are your primaries, and that's when it's really important to vote.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
Egypt's election committee announced the results of the first stage of parliamentary elections, which drew only 28% of the 32 million voters, with 2 million ballots voided. Some analysts say the vote is likely to produce a toothless House of Representatives packed with supporters of President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi that further rubber stamps his policies. Said Sadiq, professor of political sociology, explained the low turnout and the poor role of parliament in Egypt to VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
As you know, participation or turnout is always related to the enthusiasm of voters toward the institution they are voting for and the candidates. When there is trust in the power and benefit they will reap from their participation, their participation will be high. When they feel it is not going to be get them any big benefit, the participation is low. The opposite is always true. The parliament is supposed to have certain function, monitor the executive branch, because there is separation of powers, checks and balances. They are supposed to monitor the budget, what the executive is doing. But when the voters feel that it doesn't fulfill the job that is expected, the turnout is always low. In 2012, for example, the turnout in parliamentary election was about 56% because people felt empowered and there was big political differences in the country and different rivals. The turnout in parliamentary election 2015 was 28%. Now, almost the same in the first round in 2020. And this means there is lack of political motivation and trust in the institution. Because if you look at the role of parliaments in the Middle East, it has always been very weak, even historically. Members usually come from either well-known families, rich businessmen, and independents, and some poor government political parties. The voters are usually poor people who need money, bribes, financial or material rewards from the candidates. So I'm not surprised because I don't see parliaments in the Middle East doing any big job in curtailing the power of the executive. If you have a strong parliament, you don't need a revolution. You don't need unrest. You don't need the uprising because the parliament will put the executive into account. They will call them into account and save the people from revolution, bloodshed, unrest and instability.
More than 2 million votes were voided out of almost 9 million voters. What does that mean?
It is a message that all candidates were not convincing enough for this huge number, and so they sent this message by invalidating deliberately their vote.
Some analysts say the vote is likely to produce a toothless House of Representatives packed with supporters of President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi that further rubber stamp his policies, leaving the former military general with almost unchecked powers. Do you agree with such an assessment?
Most of the parliament in the Middle East are ceremonial and doing rubber stamp of policies here and there. I mean, how many times you get parliament firing the head of state or firing a minister? It doesn't happen. The executive always in the Middle East dominates the legislative. There's no separation of power. Maybe the only positive aspect is that it takes place amidst turmoil in many neighboring countries in the Middle East. Thus, it gives the image of normality and stability compared to our neighbors.
A total of 568 seats in the lower chamber are up for grabs, with more than 4,000 candidates running as individuals competing for half of the seats. The other half of the elected seats in the five-year chamber are reserved for the more than 1,000 candidates running on four-party lists. What do you make of the closed-party list system in the parliamentary elections in Egypt?
It aims at limiting the participant, and even when they have expanded the constituencies, we need a lot of money. And so only big parties, big coalitions, and rich businessmen can run. So the aim here is not to allow rival lists or independents to run. The winner here takes all. It's like the American election and the Electoral College. So the winner takes all, and they forget about the popular vote. Here, even if one party gets 55% and the other party has 45%, which means also some millions are supporting those parties, they lost. And only the guys who got 55% will get the seats. It also means that the rich can compete while the poor cannot.
That was Saeed Sadiq, professor of political sociology, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shinawi. Ugandan presidential candidate Robert Chagulani, a popular musician known as Bobby Wine, got his nomination officially approved today, but there wasn't much chance to celebrate.
Instead of going to his office, he was briefly detained by police, who took him home and took up positions outside. Katrin Nambi reports from Kampala.
When the struggle is over, we shall wear the victor's crown. We shall wear the victor's crown. When the struggle is over, we shall wear the victor's crown in a new Uganda. People power! Our power.
Uganda's Electoral Commission gave musician and legislator Bobi Wine approval this morning to challenge the country's longest-serving president, Yoweri Museveni, after he fulfilled all the requirements. Wine hailed those who have supported him despite the government's clear efforts to discourage his candidacy.
I take this opportunity to also announce that what we are witnessing right now is the launch of a very critical phase in our struggle to liberate ourselves from a dictatorship which has crippled our country for almost four decades.
Wine, who has drawn large crowds of mostly youthful followers, assured them that he has the best chance to unseat Museveni.
It is time for action, action that will put an end to the injustices, the oppression, and the impunity in our beautiful country, Uganda. I come before you not as the most qualified, not as the most experienced, but I come before you as the most committed to lead this liberation, to lead the people of Uganda out of slavery.
But as he was given a security car, he expressed fears over the continued frustration of his campaign.
I hope this car is not going to be used to intimidate me or coerce me or intimidate my supporters or coerce them in the name of security, just like other security cars and personnel have been used. I look forward to seeing you respect the law, just like I pledge to respect the law.
The Electoral Commission assured him that security will be provided throughout his campaign. Justice Simon Byabakama is the Electoral Commission chairperson.
This security is there to guard you, to protect you, not to inconvenience you at all, and not to intimidate you at all, because even we are going to deploy four guards at your home. It is your entitlement. You are an aspirant, you are a very important person in this country.
But ugly scenes ensued as police used the hammer to break the windshield of Wine's car to pull him out before whisking him off in a police vehicle. Wine had planned to launch his campaign manifesto at his party offices. Police drove him home instead, and police set up a presence outside.
I'm a presidential candidate. I am going to my office like anybody else. If you're taking orders from somebody, let them explain. You are continuing to expose yourself as a person who is deployed on me to oppress me, to torture me.
Chagulanyi's supporters condemned the treatment of their candidate. John Baptist Nambetse follows Wine's party, National Unity Platform.
This is very unfortunate in a country which purports to be upholding constitutionalism and the rule of law, and which purpose to have independent institutions like that of police and even electoral commission that is supposed to be in charge, because we are talking about a duly nominated candidate. Soon after he had been nominated, he was just handled and whisked away like a chicken thief.
Police did not immediately comment on their actions, which also left several people injured in clashes with security officers. Analysts say Wine's brief detention is an indication of tough times ahead as he tries to unseat Museveni. 11 people have been nominated to run for president in next year's general election. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Amnesty International says survivors of a massacre by rebels in western Ethiopia counted 54 bodies in a schoolyard. About 750 people were displaced in Sunday's attack, the latest in which ethnic minorities have been targeted, the Associated Press reported. Amnesty is asking why federal soldiers left the area just hours before the attackers moved in. Ethiopia's government has blamed a rebel group, the Oromo Liberation Army, which says it is fighting for the rights of the Oromos, the country's largest ethnic group. Cameroon's government says gunmen abducted at least 11 teachers in Cameroon's northwest town of Kumbo early Tuesday morning. No one has claimed responsibility, but residents suspect they were taken by separatists. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
This 45-year-old teacher says fighters attacked Presbyterian School Kumbo at about 8 a.m. Tuesday. The teacher, who asked not to be identified for fear of being targeted by separatists, says children had just finished their morning prayers when the fighters moved in and kidnapped 12 teachers.
We came in the morning, did some devotion. So surprisingly, the whole place was covered with armed guys. All of us were taken. I escaped on the way, so I don't know for certain the direction. I don't know the camp in which they were taken to.
The teacher says he and his fellow instructors were taken away on motorcycles, but that on the way, he jumped into a bush and escaped. He says no children were abducted. The other 11 teachers remain captive. Businessman Tata Leo says when he heard the news, he went to the school and picked up his children. He says the panic caused by the arrival of the armed men made the kids run to neighboring homes and a Roman Catholic cathedral that is just 80 meters away. Tata says 200 children who were excited to return to school after 4 years of the separatist crisis are now scared and may be deprived of education this year yet again.
The children who are here, the most desperate children, feel very bad and disappointed, because if you saw the anxiety in which these children started school, you would have just been mothers. And now, everybody went back, some of them are very sad and crying. We, the parents, are feeling very, very disappointed.
Military and government officials in Bui, the administrative unit where Kumbo is located, have confirmed and condemned the attack, blaming separatist fighters. No one has claimed responsibility. Before the school year began in Cameroon on October 5, the government assured parents that security was returning to the restive English-speaking regions and children could return to school. But some separatist groups said they could not assure safety for children at school and asked the central government in Yaoundé to withdraw the military before any schools reopened. Peter Ndikum, president of the Cameroon Union of Parents and Teachers, says teachers are ready to do their jobs. He says teachers just want to be safe.
The community must be ready to pull on with the teachers. The state should understand that the main concern of the teachers is the element of security. We call on the teachers to do everything possible to take up the responsibility. It's a vocation. We've been taught to do that in very difficult conditions, and the teachers should be ready to brave that.
The abduction took place about 10 days after suspected separatist groups attacked another school in the southwestern town of Kumba, killing 7 children. Separatists fighting to create an English-speaking state in western Cameroon have battled the government for the past 3 years. The UN says violence has claimed more than 3,000 lives and caused the displacement of more than 530,000 civilians. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The French government says its forces have killed more than 50 jihadists aligned to Al-Qaeda in central Mali. The French news agency AFP says the offensive, mostly airstrikes, took place last Friday near the borders of Burkina Faso and Niger. Mali has been struggling to contain a brutal jihadist insurgency, which first emerged in the north of the country in 2012. Former colonial power France launched a military operation to drive back the Islamists in 2013. But fighting has spread to central Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, leaving thousands dead and hundreds of thousands forced to flee their homes. Frustration over the seemingly endless conflict contributed to mass protests against President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita this year, culminating in his ouster by a military coup. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Swohib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.